The following is a lecture entitled Who is Srila Prabhupada? Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasat Hikari. Recorded on March 18th, 2015 at the Bhaktivedanta Manor in London, England.
So, I was speaking about tasting the bliss. I've been asked to speak about this topic, who is Srila Prabhupada? So, these things are connected. Srila Prabhupada is my spiritual master. It's very nicely stated in the Vedic wisdom, tad viganartam sagarumeva bigatschat. If you want to learn the art of tasting the highest bliss, then a master is required. You may say, well, why? I mean, why would that be necessary? I mean, I can eat some ice cream and it tastes really good. I don't need a master to teach me how to eat ice cream, you know. Doesn't make any sense, one could say. But this is a different sort of experience. It's called transcendental experience. In other words, we experience things through our gross senses. But there is another type of experience which goes beyond your gross senses, you see. And that requires the help of an enlightened master who is situated beyond the gross senses. Actually, we're all situated beyond the gross senses. These bodies are just coverings, just garments, like you're wearing that jacket tonight, you see. You're also wearing that body tonight, you see. These are just coverings we're wearing right now. You don't have to worry about getting old because actually you're not getting old. Oh, I'm aging. You're not aging. You're an eternal youth. The body is aging. But the actual spiritual being who resides in the body, in Sanskrit called Atma, that spiritual being never ages, never gets sick, and never gets old, never dies. So, my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, he teaches that art of how to connect. Of course, there are many spiritual masters. Why is this one of interest, one could ask? Actually, there's one thing called the Absolute Truth, and that Absolute Truth, when realized, brings one to the state of unlimited bliss, transcendental bliss, which is completely beyond all the ups and downs of everyday experience. So a bona fide spiritual master has fully realized the Absolute Truth. However, there are three different levels of realization of that Absolute Truth. One level is called perfect realization of the Absolute Truth. That is called Brahman realization. Another level is called more perfect realization of the Absolute Truth, Paramatma realization. The third category is called the most perfect realization of the Absolute Truth. That is called Bhagavan realization. So this particular spiritual master, he's on the highest level, called Bhagavan realization. One who has realized the Absolute Truth in the most perfect way, you see, is called Bhagavan realized, most perfect realization of the Absolute Truth. So all three levels are certainly beneficial. But the highest level of realization. So let's discuss for a moment what is the actual realization of Srila Prabhupada according to revealed scriptures and according to what he has taught us about the different levels. The highest level is Bhagavan realization. The word in Sanskrit, every syllable has meaning. So bhaga means opulence, van means possesses. So one who possesses all opulences, he is called Bhagavan, the possessor of opulences. So, what are these opulences? Power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame. These are the opulences which are fully manifested in the Absolute Truth. One who possesses these, he is called the possessor of these opulences. So this particular spiritual master is Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He realized, sometimes people say, well, when was your moment of realization? No, such a realized personality doesn't have his moment of realization. He's always in that moment of realization. It's not like, well, I had my realization and then it was great and I remember how great it was. No. The one who is fully realized, he's constantly in that state of realization. In fact, he's going deeper and deeper and deeper into it at every second. It's ever increasing. Brahma Sokyam Tvanantam. He's going deeper and deeper into that transcendental bliss at every minute. So, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he had this realization. He is living in it now also. Even though he physically departed from this realm in 1977, actually he is fully present. And those disciples who are obediently following his teachings, they are feeling his presence at every minute. They are never feeling any separation from him. They are constantly associating with him. And this great spiritual master has the power to deliver the whole universe. He was very much appreciated by George Harrison, who donated this temple, this building to him. So this level of spiritual master, he's called Jagad Guru, one who has the power to deliver the entire universe. So, actually that deliverance will gradually happen through his followers and through his divine presence, which is just as present now as it was when he was physically walking around the garden, around the property here. He's just as much present now as he was then. So, we can talk about these opulences that are fully manifest in the personality of Godhead, the Supreme Person, the source of all existence. That Supreme has unlimited power. He has unlimited beauty. There's no one more attractive than the Supreme Person because all attractiveness comes from him. There is no one more renounced also. Everything is his energy. Just like we very much relish, you know, having some nice sweets. But the gentleman who owns a sweet shop, he sells them. He doesn't go crazy on sweets. He sells them every day. He sells thousands of sweets every week. He's not going crazy, oh, sweets. Every night he goes home and has a whole bunch of sweets. It's not a big deal for him. You see, he's detached from eating them himself. He's just making money by selling them. The customers are very, oh, I got to have that one. Give me a gulab jamun, give me a rasagula. But he's renounced because he's the manufacturer of all the sweets. So that Supreme Person, being the manufacturer of everything, he's renounced. He's not running after it. It's all his energy. He's not running after it in any way. He's renounced from it. So the Supreme Person is also the Supreme Renunciate. You can't attracting within the opulences of this world because they're all his energy. So there's power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge. The Supreme Person is called Sarvagya. Sarva means all and Gya means knower, the knower of all, Sarvagya. He knows everything. Power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, everything is his energy. So he possesses everything. He's the supreme wealthy, the ultimate rich man. And finally, fame. There's no one more famous than that Supreme Person. He exists eternally. It's described in the Brahma Samhita. Ananda Chinmaya Rasat Mataya Manasu Ya Praninam Pratipalam Smadutam Mupecha Lilayatena Bhuvanani Jarat Yarashram Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose glory ever triumphantly dominates the mundane world by the activity of his own pastimes being reflected in the minds of recollecting souls as the transcendental entity of ever blissful cognitive rasa. So that supreme, his glories are so fabulous that they upstage anything else that's ever happened in the history of the universe. Even the greatest, most famous moments, you know, it's like in mundane history. When the Beatles came to the U.S., for example, that was a big moment in American history. The Beatles came. Or, you know, Declaration of Independence. Of course, maybe, I don't know what you'll feel over here, in the U.S. it's a big thing. We declared independence from Britain. 4th of July, it's called Independence Day. It's a big, supposed to, you know, big day of celebration in the U.S. They have fireworks displays going on everywhere. So these are all just, you know, from one, different perspectives. From the British perspective, it's not such a glorious thing. Some upstart, you know, radicals decided to break off from the UK. Some criminals-minded people, you know. So these moments in history, this is matters different. There matters a different perspective. But that Supreme Person, his glories are absolute. It's not like one party thinks it's great, the other party thinks it's not so great. No. His pastimes are absolute, and they upstage anything else that's ever happened in the history of the universe, or wherever it will ever happen. And his pastimes are going on at every minute. And those who have the eyes can see those pastimes happening within their hearts. It's called mystic television. So such a great personality is A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. He possesses that mystic television, for he can actually see the Supreme Person's activities going on within his heart at every minute. He has direct access to the transcendental world beyond this land of birth and death. So, let's see, we're going to 7:30. If there's any questions, you can be writing them down as I'm speaking, because in a few minutes we'll entertain your questions. So, this great personality, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, he was actually living in the spiritual world, and Lord Krishna, the Supreme Godhead, instructed him to come here to this world to give this knowledge in his books, what are now famous as the Bhaktivedanta purports, his comments on the Vedic wisdom. He was ordered by Krishna to come here to give this knowledge. Actually, he didn't want to come, but he surrendered. Krishna wanted him to come, so he came. He was hesitant to come, but he surrendered to Krishna. He described this to one of his disciples. So he appeared in 1896. And as a youth, he was a radical follower of Gandhi against British rule in India. He's a radical. In fact, he went to attend at Scottish Church's College in Calcutta, and as a protest against his British-tainted degree, he wouldn't show up to take his degree. It's a British-tainted degree. So his father had some friend who who introduced pharmaceutical medicine, you know, Western-style pharmaceutical medicine to India, Dr. Bose. So Dr. Bose had a big laboratory in Calcutta, and this young, about 22-year-old kid was made the manager of this factory because of his father's connection. So even though he didn't have his degree, he had a very good position as manager of the Bose's chemical factory there in Calcutta. So one of his friends, amongst his circle of friends, at that time he was called Abhaychatam. That's where the AC comes from in his name, AC Bhaktivedanta Swami. One of his friends, there was one sadhu, or saintly teacher, visiting from a place called Mayapur, which is about 3-hour taxi drive from Calcutta. A very holy place. So, amongst his circle of friends, Abhaychatam was considered the leader. Whatever he said was good, everyone said, oh, Abhaychatam likes it, so it must be good. So, his friend Narendranath Malik, he was thinking, oh, this is a very nice sadhu. We have to get Abhay to come and hear him. So if Abhay thinks he was good, then everyone will know he's good. But this Abhaychatam, his father named Gormahandi, he would every night receive different sadhus. In India, this is the custom. You receive saintly persons in your home very nicely. You feed them, satisfy them very nicely. It's considered great piety to receive saintly persons in your home. So his father was very soft-hearted, and every night he was receiving different saintly persons in the home. Some of them weren't so saintly, they were just beggars who dressed up as sadhus to get money. So Abhaycharan could see through this hypocrisy. So when his friend Narendranath invited him to come to hear this sadhu from Calcutta, he said, oh yes, I have seen all these sadhus. No, thank you. But his friend, no, you must come, Abhaychatam. This is not like one of those street beggar sadhus. This is a real sadhu. You must come. You must come. He said, all right. So he went to a place there in called Uttadanga in Calcutta area. Uttadanga. There was a building there, and on the rooftop, there was an area on the roof. This great sage, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was giving discourse. And so Abhaycharan comes in with a few friends, a few other people in them. And immediately, he came in as a complete stranger, not having ever seen or met or even heard of this teacher, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And he immediately said, you should spread Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. Just imagine, who's here for the first time tonight? Anybody? Or the first time? Second time? Just imagine if I said, okay, your duty is to spread Krishna consciousness to the all throughout the whole planet. You go, what? I'm just a guest here. You see, it was like that. It was shocking to him. So he argued, well, because he was a Gandhian, you know, we got to get rid of these British. He said, who will hear our message? We are a dependent nation. First business is to get rid of British rule. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati convinced him, says nothing to do with politics. This is the ultimate necessity for everyone to reconnect with the Supreme, to get out of the cycle of birth and death. And he was convinced. And he was thinking, oh, I have met such a great saintly teacher. So in this way, he said, practically he initiated me. There was no formal ceremony, but within his heart, he knew this is my spiritual master. But then for his household activities, he was not inclined to be an employee working in a factory. He wanted to have his own business. So he made a deal with Dr. Bose to be the sole distributor in northern India, and he set up a base in Prayag, Allahabad, and also a retail outlet, Prayag Pharmacy. So in this way he started his own business. He moved away from Calcutta. So he was no longer in touch with this spiritual master and his disciples. But then around 11 years later or so, around 1933, they came to Allahabad, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati's disciples, to open a center there in Allahabad. And Vaicharan was so happy. He was so happy. Oh, they have come. And he helped them, gave his time and energy, contributing also, giving donations to help them establish their mission there in Allahabad. And then an occasion came. This was, there's a holy place in India called Vrindavan Dham. There's many holy places, a huge area, many square miles. So Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur and his followers, they were doing Vrajmandal Parikrama. They were camping out in different places, and they would take darshan of different deities of Krishna, and there'd be different lectures and kirtans. It was a nice program going on for many, many days. So Vaicharan, he went to join that Vrajmandal Parikrama. Now in the evening time, there'd be a discourse, or you could go to some local temple and have darshan of the deities. But this Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he would speak in very erudite English. The materialistic Deminar cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat. In this way he would speak in very elevated English. That even us native speakers, we go, what? Look it up in our dictionary, you see. And these mostly were Bengali villagers. So, you know, how many people went to the lecture? Practically no one, except for a few sannyasis and one pharmaceutical businessman from Allahabad named Abhay Charan Day would attend. He said, I would understand or I would not understand, but still I would go on listening. So in this way he was noticed by Bhakti Siddhanta. This one hears. So the devotees of Allahabad, they recommended Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. We would like to recommend this Abhay Charan Day to become your disciple. He's very qualified. Oh yes, the others go away, but he stays and he hears. I will accept him as my disciple. So that was in 1933. And then 3 years later, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati became very, very ill. Just at that time, Abhay Charan Day, who is now Abhay Charanaravinda, was his initiated name. One who takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. He had been given that instruction in the very beginning to spread Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. He wasn't living in the ashram like the monks, the sannyasis and brahmacharis. He was a householder. He had a business. He had a family. But he's thinking, I haven't done anything. What can I do? So again, he wrote him, how can I serve you? The same instruction, spread Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. So he took that order very seriously. He began publishing a magazine, Back to Godhead magazine. And in around 1965, he was able to get, he had no money practically. He was able to scrape together from some donations and print in India the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in 3 volumes. And he got a free passage in the Sindhya steamship company from Sumati Morarji on the ship called Jaladutta, which goes from Calcutta to New York City. He got a free passage on the Jaladutta. It was a freighter, but there was one passenger cabin. So he got a free passage in 1965. And this time he's 69, around 69 years old. He actually had 2 heart attacks on the boat. He thought, if a third one comes, I'm not going to make it. But somehow he survived. In spite of 2 heart attacks, he came to America only 40 rupees, which now is about maybe a dollar, US dollar, maybe about 75 pence in British money. That's all he had. But he had the order of his spiritual master to spread Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. And with great struggle for a whole year, he rented a little tiny office space with no bathroom, no shower, just a little tiny office. And then he went to a nearby, some yoga teacher and let him cook and take his shower in his place. And he lived in a little tiny office space. Very austerely he began. But then he moved down to the janitor, stole his typewriter and his tape recorder, and he decided to leave that place. He didn't trust the janitor after that. So some hippies invited him to stay. They had a loft down in the Bowery of New York City. Hippie loft. He stayed with some hippies. But then his roommate went crazy on LSD, and he realized they can't stay here either. But then some of the boys who'd been coming, they rented a little storefront in a place called 26 Second Avenue. And a little apartment behind it for $200 a month. Very cheap now by today's standards. A storefront and an apartment for $200 a month. And he set up a little sign, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evenings, Bhagavad Gita lectures. And then they went to a few boys started coming, and the thing took off like a rocket. Alan, the famous hippie poet, from the Beat generation, Beatnik generation, Allen Ginsberg came. There was a kirtan and congregational chanting in Tompkins Square Park. The New York Times covered it. Swami attracts flock or something like that. It took off. And the Hare Krishna mantra became practically the anthem of the original hippie community in New York City. And then Michael Grant, who became Mukunda, who found the storefront, he wanted to go to San Francisco. The hippie scene was taking off now there in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood. He got a storefront for Prabhupada to imitate what they're doing in New York. He got a storefront in Haight-Ashbury. And so Prabhupada went there, and that was the second temple in 518 Frederick Street. My next lecture downstairs will kind of take off from there. I went to 518 Frederick Street in 1968. The next lecture will be kind of take off from that point. But anyway, and then some of the devotees from the Frederick Street Temple, they said, what if the Beatles got into this? Then it would really be big. If the Beatles got into it, it'd be huge. So one devotee, Shama Sundar, was thinking this way, and the other was thinking, oh, this is just a pipe dream, pie in the sky. But no, Shama Sundar was determined, no, we can do it. So Prabhupada said, all right, go to the UK. So three couples, and with one little baby daughter, Saraswati, yeah. It was Gurudas, his wife, Jamuna. It was Malati and Shama Sundar, and then there was Mukunda and Janaki. And these seven people, they didn't have enough money to enter the UK. They only had enough money for one person to enter the UK, so they go to Amsterdam. One would come in, and they wire the money over. And that way they gradually came in. They were so poor. But they had this dream. We're going to introduce Krishna consciousness to the Beatles, and then our movement will really take off, And it happened, actually. Actually, but we didn't know, but George was already interested because he has gotten a hold of an album that had been recorded in New York City. And there was used to be these hippies had this place where they would get together and make music, and our Jamuna would go there and sing kirtan. And George would come there incognito, so no one would see it was George Harrison, and really relish the kirtan that Jamuna was singing. So George had this idea, but he had never really connected. He was kind of watching secretly from a distance. But then Shyamasundara had gotten some friends, had an in to, there was going to be a meeting with a bunch of people with the Beatles, and he was able to tag along with them. And all these people were waiting to meet the Beatles in the outside room. The Beatles are in another room. Finally, the time came. The Beatles came through, and they all just walked on. But then George paused, and he looked over there, and he saw Shyamasundara with the shaved head and the tilak and the robe. And he just ignored everybody. He walked over. He said, "Where have you been? I've been waiting to meet you guys." And that it began. And the whole thing began with George Harrison, and we got this manner and by George's kindness and so many things. It was number one on the. We were on top of the old show, Top of the Pops in the UK, a big show for popular music. And so it really took off here. It was the biggest. This is all by the potency of Prabhupada, you see, divine potency of Srila Prabhupada. So we got only 5 minutes left. Any questions? I don't see any questions. Yes.
Sorry, I didn't write one. I meant to say. Some people may have the idea that they can surrender to God, but surrendering to a man, how can we just...
Why is there to be somebody in the middle of a guru, a representative of God? Can't you just surrender to God directly? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I think people can relate to the idea...
Our God is the oneness. Surrender to God, a person, or God, the oneness? Which is it?
That's another point.
Which point are you making?
People can surrender to God, but the idea of a man being involved, that can get confusing.
Having a representative of God, yeah. Yeah, I don't want anybody in the way. I mean, I just want to go directly to God. And actually, you do. You do go directly to God. Well, if God has anything to say about it, why don't we see what He says about it in the revealed scriptures? Krishna says, what is that verse? Manghi pratavya pashrata, no, not that one, but the one who is my devotee is not my devotee. How's the Sanskrit? Krishna says, the one who is my devotee is not my devotee, but the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. That's what Krishna says. So if we take God as an authority, then God has spoken in the revealed scriptures and said that I want you to come through my representative. So you say, well, why does God do that? The thing is, right now, in our present state of mind, we don't have the purified senses to actually be able to perceive God directly, to talk with Him directly. We don't have that connection because our senses are covered by lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. So if you can connect with the person who's connected, and he can teach you how to be connected, that's the idea. It's like saying, well, I'd like to talk with you directly. I don't want to use, and you say, but here's a, but the person is, you know, he's in France right now, but here's a phone. You can talk to him directly. No, I want to talk to him directly, but here's a telephone. You can talk to him directly. Will you object to the telephone? The telephone is a medium through which you can directly talk or connect with that person in France. So the spiritual master is like the telephone in one sense. He's a medium that enables you to directly connect with God. Now, if you had the power to see God directly in front of you right now, you wouldn't. If that person in France was sitting right in front of you right now, you wouldn't need that telephone. But because he's in France, he's not here in the room with you. You need that telephone to be able to speak with him directly. So, in a similar way, the spiritual master is a medium, a transparent divine medium through which we can directly connect with God. Yes.
But whoever says that it is easy to surrender to God, that means they do not understand the word surrender. Just the meaning, simple meaning of word surrender means whatever he says, I do it. So if he says surrender to the spiritual master, then I would do it. That is surrender.
Yeah. In my own spiritual pathway, I was wondering, how can I become self-realized? That was my big, you know, quest. How can I become a spiritually enlightened being? I have to do that. Everything, my whole life, that's my life. Otherwise, I'm a dead man. I have to become spiritually realized. So how can I do that? So I was studying the Bible, seeing, well, Jesus was a perfect spiritual being. How can I become like Jesus, a perfectly enlightened spiritual being? I was reading the Bible, trying to figure out what made him the perfect spiritual being. And one morning I found it. He said, "Father, not my will, but thy will be done." I said, that's it. Now, what's his will for me? I don't know. In the Bible, we see that there was a gentleman named Saul who was on his way to Damascus, and he had what the Christians call a Damascus experience. God spoke to him, "Now you are Paul, and this is your mission." I was waiting for the voice saying, "Okay, now you are so-and-so, and here's your mission." But it wasn't coming. What am I supposed to do? Is it? So I was a singer-songwriter in those days, and I was doing a little impromptu gig at a vegetarian grocery store, and nobody was listening, and I was depressed. You know, my ego was, except for one little girl, and she could see immediately, "Oh, this singer is depressed because I'm the only one listening to him." She's a smart little girl. She, you know, she did. She came and she said, "Don't worry, God can hear you." I mean, that was something special about that. And I went, wow, here I am every morning. Here I am wanting God to speak to me. I can't hear him, but he can hear me. Wow. All right. So what to do? So I started praying, "Dear God, please guide me how I can become your perfect servant." That was my mantra. Every morning, "Dear God, please guide me how I can become your perfect servant." And the guidance came. One of Prabhupada's disciples came to visit Austin, Texas. He was just down the street visiting a friend of my host. And I went and met him. And I realized I was directly talking to God, asking him to guide me how to be a servant. And this is what he sent. He sent Prabhupada and his disciple, Vishnujan Swami. I was directly approaching God, and he said, "Okay, want to be my disciple? I'm now sending you some teachers, a great teacher and the greatest of all teachers, Vishnujan Swami, a truly great teacher and the greatest of all teachers, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Because you've asked for it, now I'm sending him to you to give you the guidance you wanted so that you could become my perfect servant." So that's how it works. You just got to be sincere. You can directly approach God and ask for the blessings and the guidance, how to become perfect in relationship with them. And if you really want to do it, you're willing to do anything and everything, then he will send you a teacher. You will see, yes, and now the Lord has sent me a teacher who's going to teach me how to become fully absorbed in pure bhakti, pure love of God. Okay, our time is up. And I thank you all very, very much. I'm giving another lecture downstairs, kind of continuing on with this one. Well, it's more personal about, of course, we started on the personal aspect here, but a little more, we'll go into more detail about how I was transformed by this amazing process of ultimate realization, Bhagavan realization. Thank you all very much. You're beautiful. You're wonderful. We love you. Hare Krishna.